Welcome to Sideline Sleuths, a true crime podcast all about the tragic yet fascinating cases no one can seem to get enough of. I'm Megan.
And I'm Jasmine.
We're so glad you're listening. If you like being an armchair detective, you'll love being a sideline sleuth. Before we get started on today's story, I want to give a quick plug to this other true crime podcast called Not Your Normal Murder. They are also a two-girl podcasting duo, but they're sisters. So it's Mary and Deirdre, and Mary has a degree in mental health, and Deirdre has a criminal justice background, so definitely good perspectives for
sounds like a good
a true crime podcast.
Combination.
I know a lot of people are always looking for binge-worthy shows, and these ladies have almost 30 episodes, so it's definitely bingeable, and y'all should check them out. Today's episode is a compilation one.
Yay!
And Jasmine really likes those, and she's always like, and you always make them come together so well. But when I'm writing them, it does not feel that way. And at the end, somehow, I found some cohesion, and I'm like, eh, okay, that's fine.
It's so, an art form, and you're an artist.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about a few murders, some more recent than others, and they're not related, but they do have a couple things in common. The main one being that all of them were caught on surveillance footage, and yet they're still unsolved.
Wow.
So when I was researching these stories, I came across this statistic in a Crime Watch Daily article that said, quote, in your car, at a restaurant, at the gas station, on average, every American is caught on security cameras more than 50 times a day, end quote.
What?
And, like, I only think about it when I'm at Target in the self-checkout. It's, like, right there.
It's
but
looking at you or, like, Walmart or
like,
whatever.
People's, like, Ring doorbells, everything, like.
You're right.
And I have surveillance at my house, so.
Yeah, you do.
Come to my house, you're on camera.
Well, I mean, rest assured, you haven't been going as many places.
That's true. So lately, but 50 times a day seems like, I believe it.
A lot.
Seems like a lot.
And probably on, like, tolls and stuff like that,
yeah.
Too. Yeah.
So.
That's why we don't commit crimes.
Yeah, because, like, if you get away with it, it's, like, miraculous. But then, remember, the statistics are, like, super low. Yeah. So how are people getting away with this? I don't know. But
I don't want them to ramp it up, though.
Yeah, don't.
Okay, yeah. I don't want no more Big Brother stuff going on.
Two of the murders we're going to talk about are pretty recent. One is from 2014, and the other from 2017. And I feel like they have a good chance of being solved, because despite the killers masking their identities, both of them were caught on a store surveillance camera. Hmm. And then the third one is from 2008, and it's slightly different. But anyway, the two on the store cameras. The first one we're going to talk about is the murder of a 25-year-old man named Christopher Reese, who was murdered a week before Christmas in 2014. Chris was working the night shift at a gas station in, I don't know how to say this, Notice, N-O-T-U-S, Notice, 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 Idaho, which is really rural. It was the morning of December 17th, and two masked gunmen shot him during a robbery, asterisk.
Oh.
After more than 5 years, investigators still don't know who killed Chris. And then the next one is the 2017 murder of a man named Darrence Kendall, who was killed when he was buying something inside a Dollar General in Lufkin, Texas. The third and final one we'll talk about today is the 2008 murder of a Nebraska man named Jason Vesper, whose final moments were also caught on tape before he was stabbed to death. So, here's what we know about Chris's murder in Idaho. And it's actually our first Idaho case. On the morning of December 17th, 2014, two masked gunmen entered Jackson's food store in rural Notice, Idaho. Notice is small, like, really small. The 2010 census put the population at 531.
Ooh, yeah.
Super and small. By 2018, it had grown by 100 people, so it's still tiny, though. Notice is about 35 miles from Boise, so there's, like, a bigger area near it, but it's still, like, a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little village.
Yeah, village is probably what it is. Around 3:30 that morning, these two men entered the gas station in a way that has been described as tactical, with AR rifles, and they murdered Christopher Reese before stealing the company's safe and Chris's own car. To date, no arrests have been made in connection with Chris's murder, and the suspects' identities remain unknown.
What?
Notice is in Canyon County, which seems to be super safe, and in the last nearly 40 years, hardly any homicides. There was another murder in 1982 that recently got solved, but besides that, it's just Chris's murder. Like,
wow.
1982, 2014. I mean, there might be a few other things there, but, like, two big things, like, ever.
Yeah. So you think it's a small town, they might have more answers.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, there's only 500 of y'all. Everybody knows everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there's a lot of violent crime in the area. Idaho's crime rate is significantly lower than the national average. At the time of this incident, Canyon County Sheriff Kieran Donahue said, quote, "This is an extremely unusual, in our opinion, unusual type of crime for not just Canyon County, but the state of Idaho. This is a very violent crime." An article from the Idaho Press Tribune said, quote, "Video clips were released to the Canyon County Sheriff's Office showing one person wearing a camouflage jacket and tan pants who walked into the store with a rifle. Another video shows him leaving with a bag with weapons still in hand. The second wanted person is masked and wears a black hooded sweatshirt and blue jeans with a handgun and a waist holster. In the video, the person enters the store with a hand truck and leaves with the store's safe," end quote. A hand truck's a dolly, in case
right.
you didn't. Right. So, like, it was like a hand truck. So, they go in with a plan, clearly.
Yeah,
they brought
a
dolly.
Where the safe was.
Yeah. And
knew they could get in and get out.
The police did a reenactment of this because they didn't want to release the actual footage because it's so graphic. And it... I'll show it to you when we finish this, but it's definitely tactical. Like, they were organized, they looked professional, like...
It was planned.
Yeah.
Huh.
But because it looks so organized and professional, what happens next is really weird.
Okay.
So, when we get to theories, we'll talk more about this, but the safe that they stole was later found abandoned. The same Idaho Press Tribune article said, quote, "According to police, the safe was found off Purple Sage Road near where the two robbers abandoned Reese's 2007 Lincoln MKZ, stolen from the store's parking lot. The safe was not opened, according to Jackson Company officials," end quote.
What? So you think this is just a hit?
Yeah.
Or, like, did they, like, try to tinker with the safe and they were like, we are in over our heads?
But if you were such experts, how did you get in over your heads?
Yeah, this is really weird.
Purple Sage Road, so they ditched the car in the safe there, is about a mile from the gas station, and it's about 2 or 3 miles off, like, the main highway over there. So, it's, like, remote, but it's...
It's also even...
And it looks like they... It looks like they ditched the safe fast, like, where they ditched the car.
Yeah.
It's not like they took it somewhere, they couldn't open it, and then they abandoned it somewhere else. It's like they ditched the car in the safe...
Kind of immediately.
Yeah.
So they had no intention of opening the safe.
So,
weirdest thing I've ever heard of.
So, and we talk about some weird stuff, but, like, who killed him? Was robbery their motive? Or did they steal the safe to mask the real reason for the homicide?
Gosh, I feel like even... It's so strange because I feel like if you were going to go rob a... You were calling it a supermarket, right?
It's like a convenience store, like a gas station. A
like,
corner store, yeah.
Got you. So, why wouldn't they just, like, you know... Hey, give me all your money, bang, bang.
Yeah.
Like, you brought a hand truck.
Yeah,
son.
You
so
knew
you
were coming for the safe.
Right, and then you just abandoned it.
It just doesn't...
I already got some theories.
It's not
serious.
So,
theory,
okay,
though.
Let's talk about theories.
Okay.
So, theory one is that this is just a robbery, and Chris, unfortunately, was simply a casualty of that robbery. And second is that this was a murder, and the robbery only took place... to serve as a distraction for the gunman's real reason for being there.
Right.
Chris. And the last one is more like theory two.
Point.
Something. Point one. Asterisk. Theory two plus. I don't know. Because it's like a continuation. And that little asterisk is basically that the gunman went there specifically to kill Chris because he owed some people money or something from where he used to live before Idaho. And it somehow caught up with him. So...
Do we know a lot about Chris's history?
We know where he's from, so I'll tell you. So,
okay.
Theory one, robbery. If the motive behind all this is just a robbery, that would mean that the men just wanted the safe that was inside the store, and they killed Chris because he was an obstacle to the safe or a witness of the crime or something, and that the only thing they wanted was the safe, and unfortunately Chris is just there. But I don't think that's true. For the same reason... Like, the same reason I'm hesitant to think that is the reason I am leaning more towards the second one. And that's because they came in all tactically?
Yeah.
Tactilely. There we go. That's what I was trying to say. Tactilely, which I just made up. So they came in, like, organized and military-like, and they gave off the impression that they knew what they were doing. They had a plan. It looked calculated. So if robbery is their goal, like they went there with a dolly, if that is their goal, if the safe is what they want, why couldn't they get it opened?
Yeah. And even if they couldn't get it open right away, why wouldn't they
take it elsewhere?
Pains to yeah. open it? If you went there for the safe and there's something incredibly valuable in the safe, you got time. Nobody knows you have the safe. You could just, you
know. Nobody even knows who you are.
Weird, yeah. Creepy bunker wherever you live.
Something, yeah.
Even in a back, if you're in a rural part of Idaho, you probably just hide in your big, long backyard.
Something.
I'm just making up stuff.
I don't know anything about Idaho. One time I told the librarian in one of the high schools in our district that I didn't think I could put Idaho out on a map, and she looked at me like I was crazy, and I was like, I don't know, because her dad lived there or something, and I was like, I got nothing. So if you're from Idaho, I'm really sorry. I know literally nothing about Idaho.
Except this map.
That's like such a Texas thing for me. And I'm not even a Texan, but like,
what, not knowing where the state is?
Just, like, only knowing about Texas? Like, only, like, I'm good on Texas. But, like, the rest of the country, it's, like, a blur, not Texas.
Well, I'm just geographically challenged, period.
But Texans are so,
yeah, Texas-centric.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. People, like, send me Texas memes, and I'm like, y'all, I'm not even from Texas. They're like, you might as well be, by the way you promote it. All right. You're not wrong. So, a lot of people who are of the belief that this is just a robbery point out that the location is really rural and it's a few miles off the highway. So there's less traffic in and out than, say, maybe one directly off the interstate. So there'd be less potential witnesses. But other people think that if you're going to rob a place, wouldn't you want to be in and out quickly?
Yeah,
and
right close to the highway.
Back on a major road as fast as possible so you could blend in with other cars rather than being, like, in the boonies?
Yeah.
And at this point, it's 3:30 in the morning when Chris was killed. How much traffic is in and out of the store to begin with? Like, does it really matter if you pick the one that's 3 miles off of I-84? Or could you just pick the one off of I-84? Yeah. It's 3:30 in the morning in Idaho.
Yeah, this it to me, I feel like I'm leaning toward the fact that it's, like, pointed. Like,
yeah.
It's very intentional.
So
execution.
That's what I think, yeah. So theory two, staging a robbery as a distraction with the possibility that maybe Chris owed somebody money wherever he lived before Idaho, or at least was escaping something. First off, who moves to Idaho?
You, right? And witness protection, some something.
He's from Tennessee, so it's not even like a little bit close to Idaho. I mean, like, if you're going to run away from something in Tennessee, rural Idaho, notice Idaho, 530-something people, seems like a good game plan. Like, who is going to come look for you in Idaho?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it's 2,000 miles from Tennessee. So if you were packing up and starting over, like, how did you even know Notice Idaho existed?
Yeah, maybe somebody told you.
Well, he lived somewhere else in Idaho for a little bit before that, but not much different, like Parma, Idaho or something. And also rural and out there. So, like, how did you find them from Tennessee? Like, it's not like you had family over there. Yeah. You just, like, moved to Idaho.
Yeah. To work at a convenience store.
Yeah. Weird. So I don't know who these people are, and I don't know why they would have wanted to kill Chris, but in all accounts, they're organized and experienced, and if that's the case, they should have been able to open the safe if they're some, like, expert robbers or whatever. And, like, if you're an expert robber, why'd you pick this little gas station in Idaho unless there's something we don't know about that store? And if you're hitmen who were looking for or sent to find Chris Reese, kill him, and then never have it lead back to you or whoever hired you, they certainly did that.
Yeah.
They're not very good robbers, but maybe they were never meant to be.
Yeah.
Maybe they're hitmen. What do you think?
I think it's really, I want to know more about this convenience store and, like, who knew he worked there. I mean, I guess everybody in town.
There's only 500 of them.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I guess I would just ask everybody in town.
Yeah.
I feel like in big cases, you just ask everybody.
I feel
connected.
Like little towns, if there's something, like, particularly heinous, they're going to
want to talk.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Yeah, it's the biggest thing that's going on.
And they're going to feel unsafe, and they're going to want to get to the bottom of it. So, like, if somebody knew something.
I don't know. Before you told me all the other stuff, I was like, oh, maybe, like, the, you know, owner of the convenience store, like, wanted to get, like, insurance money for a safe, and, like, then they did a bad job, and, but
they've never figured out who those guys
are. Answer the question as much as an execution. I feel like it fits more for an execution. Yeah. I want to know more about Chris, too.
Yeah, but
That's it?
It's been 5.5 years.
And you said they had really good security cam footage and they still can't? Oh, because they had masks on.
Yeah, well, we can't. I'll show you the recreation, but the real video has not been released. Seen. But their outfits are pretty detailed, but they're covered up. And yeah. So, Canyon County Sheriff Kieran Donahue said there's obviously more than just these two shooters who know about this crime. Those who have harbored information about the case, maybe because they fear the killers, should actually be more afraid of the judicial system, he said. But I don't know. There are obviously some scary people, and I'd be afraid of them too, so I don't know if I'd really be...
The judicial system ain't...
Yeah,
clearing the case.
That's kind of hit or miss, so I don't think... I don't know. I'd like to think I would tell people, but if they're, executioners, and you happen to know...
I'd call Crime Stoppers.
That's true. But what if you're the only other person who knows and they're going to know it was you who said something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd tell, but I'd also want, witness protection or something.
Yeah, that might not have worked for Chris.
Yeah, see, maybe, yeah. Ooh, that would be an interesting angle if he was part of that. They still found him. I'm in a lot of true crime groups on Facebook and in a lot of podcaster groups, too. And I often see people ask, what are some episodes where the case ends up getting solved later? And there are some, but there's really not that many. And that's why I picked today's cases, because I feel like they're recent enough and they were caught on tape and more than one person knows about it. So they could figure them out. Chris's is totally capable. There's a video of it.
Yeah.
So
it's not a hopeless.
In his story, there are two gunmen. And in the next one, Darren's Kindles, there's two people there too, but he was shot and the clerk lived to tell about what happened. So someone knows who the men are in the video that killed Chris Reese, and someone knows who the man is in the video that killed Darren's Kindle, too. Here's what we know about him. Darren's was 31 years old at the time of his death. On the evening of Friday, November 3rd, 2017, Darren's Kindle got off work at Georgia Pacific and headed to the Dollar General to buy cigarettes, something he often did. At 9:48 p.m., so not even particularly late, in the middle of that transaction, a masked gunman entered the store and demanded money. The killer was inside the store for only 4 seconds before he fired a single shot, hitting Darren's in the head and ending his life.
What?
I've seen some of this video, but it doesn't show Darren's actual death because it's super graphic, but it has been reported that the, quote, video of the murder shows that the killer didn't flinch as the shot was fired or when Darren's fell to the floor, end quote. So he just, came in. It said that Darren's, looked over his shoulder, saw the guy, and the guy shot him in the head in 4 seconds. No hesitation, emotionless, just, looked at him, shot him, killed him. So.
Why were you dropping a Dollar General?
Yeah.
So he demanded money and then shot some guy that's not even going to give him money?
Yeah. After murdering Darren's, he put a shopping cart between the store's automatic doors to keep them open and continued demanding money from the store's clerk. But... because this guy didn't waste any time shooting Darren's, he couldn't get the register open because Darren's transaction was still in progress. So the clerk couldn't even open the drawer because it was mid-purchase.
What?
Then the killer fumbled with his weapon. He was trying to shoot the clerk, but something was wrong with his gun and it wouldn't fire.
Well, this is a total amateur.
So completely different than the murder in Idaho. So at some point he jumps on the counter and he's pointing the gun at the clerk. The gun's not going off. He jumps off the counter. He, rifles through Darren's pockets to see if there's anything. And then he, flees the store into a wooded area.
He rifles through his pockets?
Because he couldn't get any money from the cashier. But,
this had is
not,
pathetic.
Had you not killed him immediately upon entrance, he could have bought his cigarettes and went on his way. And then you could have got the drawer open. But because you killed the guy. But also, can't the cashier just void that transaction?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, maybe it was his card was I don't know, did he pay in cash? I don't know any of that
stuff.
I don't
know anything either, so.
I would like to know more details.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, the cashier couldn't, told him he couldn't give him the money or whatever because.
I'm sure he was stressed the heck out.
Yeah.
I'd be
flustered. I don't know what to do.
Take everything in the store. I don't care. Is this your boy?
Yeah, but he didn't. He didn't even steal things from the store. He just went through Darren's pockets and then ran.
This is going to sound terrible, but this sounds pretty crackish.
Pretty crackish. So a drug-motivated crime.
Just feverishly, not thought out, but just kind of desperate
for
any kind of couple dollars.
Yeah, because he didn't come in with a hand truck and a militia.
Yeah, or knowing where the safe was, or even to know to demand to know where the safe was.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I agree with you. This is like a not planned, spur of the moment. I need some cash. I'm
gonna kill a random customer of this store.
I'm gonna rob this Dollar General.
Dollar General. I'm just gonna tell you, I don't think
everything costs like a dollar.
Everything costs a dollar. They're not gonna have a lot of cash on hand. Most people use electronic transactions anyway nowadays.
Oh, fact. Like, yeah. What are you doing? Thinking?
And this was in 2017.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. This is crackish.
Yeah, crackish. I can. This seems like a drug. We're going to word that nicer. This seems like a drug motivated crime.
Okay. Yeah. That's more official.
Yeah. So, Darren's killer is described as being a young, slim, light skinned black man, about 5 feet 10 inches tall. He was wearing a dark colored hoodie, light colored basketball shorts, red shoes, gloves, and a green Halloween mask. But, like, he had the forethought to wear gloves and a mask. So.
I mean, Toss, you can't good for him, but that much credit. I mean, like, everybody knows when you're about to commit a crime, wear gloves and a mask. It's the one oldest thing. So. Tale is old as time.
Is that from Beauty and the Beast?
Yes.
So, because of the gloves, he didn't leave any fingerprints at the scene, and because of the mask, the clerk and the cameras never saw the suspect's face. Now, this happened in Lufkin, Texas, and Lufkin isn't a big city either. The population in 2018 was between 35 and 36,000 people. And it's the largest city in Angelina County, which should tell you that there's like nothing else in the area.
I was about to say Angelina County.
And it's about 115 miles northeast of Houston and 168 miles from Dallas, where we live. So it's like way over there in East Texas, and 35,000 people isn't a lot. So somebody knows something. And one of the 35,000 people is probably the shooter, because where else did he come from? There's nothing over there. So, in smaller areas, people have a hard time rationalizing random acts of violence more than they do in a bigger city. Police have said that there were rumors that Darren's was targeted and that the shooter shot and killed him for some kind of reason, and that, like, maybe they knew each other or something, but police say no. People just don't want to think that they could have been gunned down inside a store while making a purchase. But sadly, it could have been anybody that he killed that day. Lufkin police say they have no reason to think that this murder was anything other than random. There's no evidence to suggest that Darren's knew his killer or that he was targeted. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Sucks a lot.
Yeah, but like, in a little area, they're going to want to think, like, oh, it had been personal. Like, I'm not at risk. But like, yeah. It could have been anybody in that Dollar General. He didn't even hesitate. 4 seconds in the store, bullet to the head. Like, it could have been anybody.
Gosh. And it's crazy to me that the clerk lived.
Only because the gun didn't fire.
Oh, you're right.
Otherwise, he would have killed the clerk, too. So. Yeah.
He was a hot mess.
Drug motivated.
Crackish.
Yeah. The last story I'm going to tell you about is the murder of a 40-year-old man in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. And this is actually our first Nebraska story. Our co-worker and friend, Nas, is from Nebraska.
He's my favorite.
And if you remember, Sidelines Loose was originally a trio. Very short-lived. It was just one episode. And he was our third co-host. So I have been meaning to pick a Nebraska story for him. And this is it. So here's what we know about Jason Vesper. On Wednesday, January 2nd, 2008, Jason had an argument with his wife, Debbie. Earlier, their son Joshua had had some kind of argument with his mother, Debbie, first, and she took away his cell phone. On the night Jason was killed, he and Debbie argued over Jason giving Josh the phone back. After the fight, he got in his car and left. Some reports say Debbie kicked him out, but others say he just left to cool off. But either way, he was killed shortly after. The investigation into Jason's murder uncovered that nearly every single move he made that night, or morning, rather, was captured by security cameras, starting with the camera aimed right at his driveway, like a neighbor's security thing.
Oh, I was like, what?
You were like, what? He's watching them? Yeah. So, yeah, in my house, I can see all kinds of, and like, if you drive by my house, our, like, floodlights turn on at night. So it's like, you can't do anything.
Good.
Anything. Like, but it constantly freaks me out when I'm watching TV and the light's coming on at my front door, and I'm like, oh, somebody's just backing out. Somebody's just arriving home. But, yeah, you're not, we're catching everything on my street, so. So at 12:46 a.m., Jason backs his truck out of the family's driveway. There's a convenience store right up the street, so just over 1 minute later, Jason is on camera at a truck stop, and he's on the phone with his son, Joshua. Jason told him that
he was... On his cell phone.
Yeah, but it keeps track. It's good for our timeline of events, yeah. So Jason tells his son that he's just out driving around. They get off the phone and Jason pays for his drink. Scott's bluff police chief said that only Jason and the clerk were inside the store. As Jason's leaving, an elderly man with a cane enters, but he and Jason don't have any kind of interaction or even so much as a look at each other. So, Jason left home at 12:46. At 12:56, he's already in and out of the store and seen on a security camera on some city-owned property at an intersection. So, like, it was fast. Okay. This is the moment and location where investigators think he first encountered his killer.
What?
Scotts Bluff Police Chief Kevin Spencer said that in the footage, the car is in front of Jason's truck, and suspect's car is turning, but he hesitates a little bit. He said, quote, "We think that the car hesitates a little. There might have been some kind of exchange. Like, something happened between him and Jason, so he's like, maybe I'm not going to turn right here." So, Joshua, his son, says, quote, "I feel like maybe the vehicle pulled over a little too close to his, and maybe he got a little upset," end quote. Like a road rage?
Really?
So, no one knows for sure, but now that person's after Jason. The camera shows Jason circle the block and return to that intersection again. And then you see the suspect's car behind him. So it's like he made a U-turn. He, like, turned, but he came right back around. So he and Jason, like, make a circle together. Cameras at a nearby school pick the two cars up at 12:57. So, like, real fast. Yeah. Like, 1 minute later, they're together again. The suspect is trying to get Jason to pull over. He's behind him, and he's flashing his headlights. Chief
what
Spencer's... Right? Like, creeps me out.
So creepy.
Chief Spencer said, quote, "The two are stopped for 50 seconds at 14th Street and Avenue F. We know Jason is being killed at this time," end quote. So, he's trying to get Jason to pull over, and Jason makes the decision that ultimately ends his life. He pulls over, the suspect gets out of his car, approaches Jason's car, they're both stopped there for 50 seconds. But this is the only time this whole night, the short drive, that Jason is out of the view of a camera. And that's because a house and a tree are blocking them. So you can only see that the two cars are stopped for 50 seconds, and then they move again. And in those 50 seconds, the suspect stabbed Jason Vesper 16 times.
Stabbed him?
Got out of his car, approached him, and just shanked this man for no freaking reason. Got in a fight with his wife, he goes to buy a drink, he leaves to go home, and he gets killed. And this, like, he lived like a minute from this gas station.
This is so wild to me. I can't imagine having, what, 1 minute of... like, road interaction with somebody that
being
puts
so
me on 100 in order to not just stab a person, but stab 16. Them 16 times in 50 seconds.
And the camera doesn't... It's not like that a fender bender. The security footage doesn't show them colliding. Maybe it said maybe he was a little too close to him or something.
But still, I mean, like, people are raggedy drivers. It's not personal.
I'm one of them. No, I'm just kidding. I'm
not. People do, like, tend to, like, hold on to parts of my car as they're riding with me.
Yeah.
I'm not great at it.
Yeah.
But it's not intentional.
I'm just picturing this in my head. Oh, that's funny. So.
Wow. And even if you're thinking about it, it's late night rural driving. So, like, I feel like if you live in, I don't really know how rural this place is, but I'm pretty sure, like, Nebraska isn't, like, super populated.
It's not Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, I've been.
You've been to Nebraska?
Yeah, it was random. It's very green there. There's a lot.
Oh,
it's
pretty. So it's worth going to. Maybe not. Sorry,
maybe on
guys.
The way somewhere else. Sorry. Damn, we might have to cut that out.
That was funny.
It's cool. They got some quirky stuff. It's a little hip.
Yeah.
Hipster-y. Anyway,
yeah,
sorry.
Okay. We love Nebraska.
Yeah, my bad. Well, Nas comes from there, so you know
it's
gotta
be a
dope.
Good place, yeah.
Yeah. I heard there's, like, some good... Never mind. But
yeah.
Long and the short.
Digging
I feel like if it's... Yeah, I'm just going to move back to the point I was trying to make before I put my foot in my mouth.
Okay.
I feel like if you're driving around in a rural place, or even late at night... I mean, I guess it's not super rural because there's cameras everywhere.
At times, his whole drive was covered in a camera.
Gosh.
Okay, so... Still, Jason survived at first, and despite his wounds, he tries to drive home.
That's what you said, the cars move again.
Yeah, and he
like, wow.
Almost makes it home. He's found, like, half a block away before he crashes into a snowbank in, like, his neighbor's yard, basically. And actually, his own family finds him bleeding to death inside his truck down the street
from
them.
Holy moly.
Yeah. He's found at 1:06 a.m., so the entire thing, leaving his house, going to the store... Whatever interaction, getting killed, and then being found is 20 minutes.
that. This is the most horrendous thing. I don't even know how.
Yeah.
How do you stomach that as a family? You're like, okay, we had a rough
night. Yeah.
And 20 minutes later, he just goes
to buy a drink and he gets killed. But it would be days before police learned that he was actually stabbed elsewhere and not where they found his truck. And by then, snow had melted or new snow had covered up any potential forensics that could have been at the scene.
And really, what are the chances that there are any forensics?
Their best chance would have been the suspect's blood, too, because if you're, like, thrashing someone, you might have hurt yourself at the same time. But it took days before they even knew where the real crime scene was.
Dang, and there's no blood in his car or anything? Mm-hmm. Dang.
Unlike Chris Reese and Darren's Kindle, the surveillance footage of Jason Vesper's murder is outside. And it was below zero with the wind chill making it like negative 18 degrees that January morning. So there was frost on the lens of the cameras that picked up this brief chase and showed the other car. So it's not as good as the footage inside the stores where Darren's and Chris were killed. There is still footage, but like...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's a little bit compromised.
An expert analyzed the shape and size of the other car's headlights and determined a few cars that it could have been. It could have been between a 1985 and 1988 Cadillac DeVille or Fleetwood, or a 1985 to 1990 Oldsmobile 98.
That's a good narrowing down. Real good. Way to go.
Unfortunately, it's been more than 12 years since Jason was killed, and that vehicle was never definitively located or identified. Police looked at the family first, asking his son Joshua, the last person to talk to him, and Debbie, his wife, who he just had a physical, slightly, altercation with.
That's what I was thinking.
To take polygraph tests. And they both cooperated, but Debbie was too distraught or too stressed for the test to work right. Police have never released the results of these tests, but do not suspect that anyone in Jason's family is involved in his murder. They also don't think that someone was waiting outside their home that night for him to leave, because it was so unplanned.
Yeah.
Like, Jason didn't know he was going to the store. No one knew he was going to leave. Like, what are the chances that, like, you have a fight with your wife? Yeah. Instead, just like Darren's Kindle, police believe that Jason Vesper was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and his death was a random act of violence.
What's wrong with people?
So, remember how I said that Lufkin was really small? Well, Scottsbluff is even smaller.
Okay.
In 2008, when Jason was killed, the population was less than 15,000.
See, okay, so I felt like he was a small place. Yeah.
So we have 35,000 for Lufkin, 15,000 for Scottsbluff, and 600 for Notice, Idaho, where Chris Reese was murdered.
All tiny, itty-bitty places. So, like, you know somebody knows something.
Little towns and communities where people think they're safe, there's lots of security cameras, and yet they're all unsolved. And Darren's and Jason's murder seem to be random, which... admittedly, is more unsettling, but yeah. I'm not so sure about Chris's.
I don't feel like that one's random. Yeah, that one leaves more questions for sure.
But when it is personal, it's not like a threat to the public. So,
you'd hope.
But like Darren's and Jason's, that's a threat. There's a crazy person in your community who stabs people after a 1 minute interaction that was potentially road ragey.
Yeah, I don't even see how much road rage. I don't know, because this is just a random observation. I feel like in small towns late at night, like around that time, like a lot of people like drink and drive and loop, and they just like, you know, they go out on the country roads and like,
my sister lives in a small town. I remember before we had children, her husband just like looped the town all the time. Like, what else is there to do?
Going for a drive. Yeah. So I wonder if that person just wasn't in like a normal state of mind.
Yeah.
And they just flipped out. I don't know. It doesn't make you feel any better.
Or maybe they were looking for somebody to target. I don't know. There's not a lot of people on the roads. Beer. Yeah, that's unsettling.
Oh, that's so I'm glad I'm in quarantine. Stay inside.
If you have any information about the murder of Christopher Reese, please contact the Canyon County, Idaho Sheriff's Office at 208-454-7531 or call Crime Stoppers at 208-343-COPS. You can also reach them online by going to 343COPS.com. There is a $100,000 reward for solving Christopher Reese's murder. If you have any information regarding the murder of Darren's Kindle in Lufkin, Texas, you can submit a tip anonymously through Crime Stoppers by going to 639-TIPS or by calling 936-639-TIPS. And I'm not sure about other states, but something I learned while researching this episode is that rewards in Texas are only for anonymous tipsters. like from Crime Stoppers, if you give any identifying information, you disqualify yourself from receiving a Crime Stoppers reward. To get the Crime Stoppers reward, you have to remain anonymous and you have to go through Crime Stoppers.
That's interesting.
It's like to further protect you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's pretty neat. So if you have any information about Jason Vesper's murder in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, or if you think you may have seen Jason's truck that night or the other vehicle following him, please contact Scotts Bluff County Crime Stoppers at 308-632-STOP or the Scotts Bluff Police Department at 308-630-6280. His family is also offering a $10,000 reward.
Thank you for listening to Sideline Sleuths. If you have any comments or questions about this case or just feedback about the show in general, you can find us online at facebook.com/sidelinesleuths. And if you haven't already had the chance, please rate and review the show on iTunes, Facebook, or any social media or streaming platforms available.